Ted, David Cumming from the RACV. Thank you for some of those policy announcements today, and we look forward to hearing more about them. But in the area of taxation, which you've raised, where will your government stand on the indexation of taxes, fees and fines, which the RACV finds quite abhorrent, and also where will you stand in relation to tax on having taxes on taxes, one of the worst being, of course, the GST on excise?
Easy question first, David.
It's quite...
I might have been going too quick, but I did mention on the way through that we will abolish the indexation of fines and fees and charges. We think that's been a most unfortunate move by this government. They are hiding a significant increase in the tax burden. And it's interesting when you talk to an audience, as I suggested before, and ask them what state taxes do they pay. And I find about 5% of people will hold their hands up and say, yes, I pay a state tax. The other 95% forgetting that the GST comes back to the states. And there is this massive disconnect between voters, between electors, between Victorians and the revenues raised on the state base. And it's true of the other states as well. And we want to make that far more accountable. And that's why we'll make moves to make it more transparent. So, yes, we'll abolish the indexation component. On terms of the tax on a tax, we've had that argument bandied around a fair bit over the last 12 months, and somebody very close to your shoes has been very good at putting the argument, David. In terms of tax policy, we'll make some announcements before the election, but there's been an interesting alignment of views on that subject between the federal and state governments, but we'll be saving some announcements on tax in detail until we have a slightly better view of what the budget situation is in Victoria. And you recall, you may recall, some may not, that we now have an arrangement where there is a pre-election budget update, and the date that's to be advised is still to be determined. But given we've got a fixed date for an election, I put the challenge to the Premier. Declare now, Premier, when you're going to release the pre-election budget update and make it in sufficient time to allow Victorians to make an assessment. Because if we're only going to get it in the last 10 days, then Victorians will not have that opportunity. So I'd say, as I said a couple of weeks ago about the government's advertising program. Let's bring it forward. We know the date of the election. Let's bring it forward, and then we'll have much more opportunity to discuss the detail of the issues you're raising.
Thank you very much. We've got a question just here.
Brian Welch, Master Builders. Congratulations, Ted, on your presentation. Very good. Question, and you were talking state taxes, so I'm inclined to ask you, and it was the previous week, I think, that Mr. Beattie was announcing the fact that virtually no first-time buyer in Queensland will be paying any stamp duty. For an average home, that's $17,000. For first-time buyers, that's $17,000 in Victoria. Stamp duty has risen to absurd levels here for people transacting in the property sector. So that's a question which is hard for governments to get off the drip of money such as that. So I'd like some, if you can, give some insight into how you'll deal with it. And generally speaking, about 2030, you've not been made any comments about that in your presentation. But for me, I think it's an interesting perspective about where you see Melbourne going and what you see, how you're seeing it developed for the future. So I'd welcome your thoughts on those topics, please.
Okay, there's a fair wide range. And in terms of stamp duty, this government's taken the total budget sector from around about $19 billion in the last year of the Kennett government to approaching now $33 billion, 32 something around. It's been a substantial increase in the budget sector. And along the way, stamp duty has gone in that period from about $1 billion to close to $2.5 billion. Now, if you're a first home buyer in Victoria on a typical house and land package, I think you're paying around about $16,000. In Queensland, and we'll see how true Peter Beattie is, or other parties are to their words, in Queensland, but at the moment it's about $5,000. And in New South Wales, nothing. It's a significant difference. And I listened with amusement to the Premier suggesting that people didn't really want a stamp duty reduction, which is an extraordinary claim, that they would prefer something else rather than a stamp duty reduction. Well, I don't agree. I think particularly for first home buyers, it's a really big impost. And forgive me if I save the detail of that until another announcement, but we're acutely aware of the impost of stamp duty. On Melbourne 2030, I was the planning shadow when Melbourne 2030 was introduced in October 2002, just before the election, that of course we didn't know was going to happen. It turned out to be an organised little deal. And I said on day one, because we were invited to comment on day one, that I thought it lacked the confidence of the people and it was based on flawed assumptions and wouldn't work. In my view, everything I said that day has proved to be correct, and the document and the planning strategy lacks the confidence of the community, lacks the confidence of the development industry, and yes, there are some delightful principles in it, and who wouldn't support the principle of a safer city? It's a bit hard to argue against that. But this document is more than that, and it's eroded over the last 4 years, and we've committed to withdrawing it. We've committed to building a new metropolitan growth strategy based on a capacity audit of infrastructure and also to reinstating the growth area plans that had been in place since the early 90s in the west, south east and the north. And the government retreated from those when they introduced 2030. They have slowly crept out to them again. We say they should be reinstated in full, which will assist land supply and help to keep land prices down. The whole range of other principles and measures we had in that planning policy, but we think 2030 is fundamentally flawed and is eroded to the extent where there is no community confidence in it whatsoever, and it's now counterproductive.
Thanks, Ted, for being so open. Gary Addison from CPA Australia. Thanks, Ted, for being so open with you about the opposition's policies. Well, taxation's popular today, and my question is also on taxation as well. It's about the GST agreement, the Commonwealth-State Intergovernmental Agreement. And as you know, the Victorian government has effectively abolished nearly all of the taxes under that agreement, with the exception of one tax, and that's the stamp duty of business or commercial property transfers. And all the other state governments have adopted a similar position on that matter. My understanding is that their concern is that removing stamp duty on commercial property transfers, but not removing it on residential property transfers. You recall just a few days ago, the National Party and Liberal Party in Queensland got over that problem because they've said they'll abolish both of them. Although I noticed in the press this morning that they're shifting the start date out for another 12 months. Now, I wonder, Ted, if you could just comment on those developments and perhaps indicate whether you think this will be a major issue in the upcoming campaign.
Well, as I said before, stamp duties on property is around about $2.5 billion in a budget of $32 to $33 billion. So it's a significant hit. I'd love to be standing here now and telling you that I'm going to announce tomorrow morning that we'll abolish land tax, stamp duty, payroll tax and speeding fines. Will that restore pride in Victoria? Oh, all right then. That's a joke, guys. Don't write that down. How we reduce taxation and keep a responsible budget intact is part of the exercise. We want to lower business costs, and I think one of the problems is that we have shifted from competitive federalism, where the states did compete against each other, to lower taxation and to maximise efficient service delivery, to a situation where every state and territory is now of the same political hue. And each is allowing the situation to creep up. Now, occasionally we'll get an election outcome or an election commitment which may serve to reduce that, and I think that's a healthy process. But we have changed competitive federalism. Now the states compete against the federal government because they all collaborate. I think Peter Beattie's a pretty good thunder thief. There are other pretty good thunder thieves in Queensland, and I hope they do very well tomorrow. And I hope that whichever side is elected can make a manoeuvre in that direction. And I recall vividly that act of competitive federalism when J. Bjelke-Petersen removed death duties and the other states just collapsed behind them. That's competitive federalism at its best, but we have to balance it with a responsible budget program. That's why we need to know well in advance, Premier and Mr. Brumby, tell us what the update on the budget is. You know the election date. Let's get on with it.
You've just said that you'll repeal the Victorian renewable energy legislation. Given technology developments in the Latrobe Valley will take more than 10 years to come around, what policies will you put in place to curb greenhouse gases so they don't rise by 30% in the next 10 years?
Well, that's a fair question. We'll make announcements about energy policy before the election, but let me say that and Pacific Hydro are very active proponents of wind, and good luck to them, because any business that does business in this state is only doing what the government allows. But I make the observation that we can litter our coastline with turbines, each of them 50 or 60, 40, 50 stories high. And we will industrialise one of our competitive assets, and that is our lifestyle and landscapes. But it won't stop Latrobe Valley burning brown coal. It is our competitive advantage position, and it will provide 90% or more of our power needs. And industry needs that low-cost power base. Now, we can advance down the wind direction. We can go down a solar path. We can go down biofuels. We can go down the path of geothermals. But it's interesting that when it comes to wind, wind is not regulated in any way in Victoria. There's no legislation governing it, and there's only guidelines which actually encourage wind development, so be it. But we have legislation introduced by this government which we supported in regard to geothermals. There's no equivalent legislation for wind, even though wind makes a much more significant impact on a landscape and is more divisive in communities. And wind has its advocates, of course, and those who might be said to be its sceptics. But if we want to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we have to reduce them at the source. And pretending that building another energy source is going to stop the Latrobe Valley burning is we're just kidding ourselves. We have to reduce emissions in the valley. The federal government have recognised this. We want to support those moves and add as best we can. And indeed, I think the industry want that as well. And that's where Victoria's future is going to be focused as far as we're concerned.
Thanks, Ted. Andrew Bunting from Architectus, and because you are one, can I remind you that's Latin for architect? My question is to...
Thank God you're here.
My question's regarding your educational vision. Given the slamming the current government's had about the state of school buildings across Victoria, can you elaborate a bit more on what your government would do to revitalise the provision of education facilities, not just in terms of upgrading and perhaps renewal of old models, but do you have a vision of how education might be provided in the state in some way that it is not happening at the moment?
Well, we've already made a commitment to, just in terms of facilities, that we would very substantially increase the government's commitment to the maintenance budget, and we're prepared to commit $250 million of our budget program to that. I've been really puzzled that the government was relying for its expansion program and maintenance program on the sale of Snowy Hydro, which is an energy facility / water facility, and to take that into partly a school building program and a maintenance program. Hard to argue against, because we all want good school facilities, but it doesn't seem to be a straightforward fit. And now that that's collapsed, that sale's collapsed, we asked the Premier, subsequent to the collapse, well, how are you now going to fund that program? And he invited in a parliamentary committee all Victorians to go and look at the prospectus for Snowy Hydro and satisfy themselves that the dividend flow from Snowy Hydro to the government would be sufficient to fund this on a two-year delayed program. So we said, fine, show us the prospectus. Still haven't got it. Asked in Parliament, still haven't got it. Asked repeatedly, still haven't got it. Premier then wrote to his counterparts in Snowy Hydro and said, oh, do you mind if I release it? I invite anybody who has seen the prospectus to show me. because I've got a sneaking suspicion the Premier was having us on in the first place, and I don't know how they're going to fund the program that they announced. As an architect, worked on schools, including on strategic planning and master planning of a number of schools, including switching some schools from a primary secondary basis to a prep junior, middle and senior college basis, and various other moves, including some co-education moves in schools. So I'm conscious of the opportunities to refashion schooling, but one of the keys to schools is to get behind our teaching profession. It's a tough gig teaching. We want to support the teachers that we have in Victoria in every possible way and to allow them to develop so that the students can develop to the max. And that's why we want to reintroduce tech schools. We've announced generic locations for several of those, and to move from just the two selective schools we have now, where kids with aspiring, with aspirations to excellence, we've got Melbourne High and McRobb at the moment, we want to add another four, and we've provided generic locations for them because we want excellence to be the focus of education. To do that, we're going to have to partner with the teaching profession, get the best teachers and give them maximum support. That would be, in summary, a generic approach to it. But in terms of how any particular school would organise, I think there are that many permutations that I would be looking to individual school communities to have a greater role.